Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. It's our series on profitable niches in real estate. Lots of different cool ways to invest in real estate. We're going to talk about a big one today and one we rarely cover. It's commercial property today on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio show. I'm your host, Robert Helms. With me, as usual, co-host financial strategist, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
You know, it's been great these last few weeks talking about all these niches in real estate because there's just so many ways to invest. And I think it's awesome when you can consider another way to invest in real estate. Even though you've tried stuff that's worked, maybe you've gravitated towards something. Our idea in this series is not to say, hey, one's better than the other. It's, hey, there's a lot out there. And today we're going to talk about a great, great subject, maybe one of the biggest segments in real estate. That's commercial real estate.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially right now, you know, we could probably change the Real Estate Guys radio show to the Profitable Niches Real Estate Show because we could go 52 weeks in a row and have a different niche to cover. And that's because real estate is so nuanced. I mean, you look at broad categories like residential, but inside residential, you've got mobile homes, you've got housing, you've got apartments, you've got senior living. You could go on and on, student housing, workforce housing. I mean, just in residential.
Right.
And so you look at these different categories and there's all these little places to play. And of course, the thing is some areas fall in favor, some areas fall out of favor. And the key, I think, to being successful is recognizing what is going on economically, what is going on demographically, what is going on socially, what's getting hot, what's getting cool, and putting yourself in the path of progress.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a little different when you start thinking about these different asset types and commercial especially. I think there's, you know, your average real estate investor goes, well, I get investing in a house. And once I have a few houses, okay, well, apartments, yeah, that makes sense. Maybe small apartment building. And then it's like, well, if I got some buddies together, we might syndicate a larger apartment building. And well, that makes sense. And we talked about, you know, home parks and assisted living. And okay, people live there. But then you go by the mall and either it's vibrant as can be or dead as a doornail.
Right.
Then you go by a huge industrial park, and you're thinking, wow, this isn't for me. Obviously, this is not the average investor kind of stuff. Well, that's a paradigm we're going to break today. You know, over my years in real estate, I've owned industrial property and retail property and office buildings and all kinds of different property that I hadn't even thought about when I started investing. My first property was a duplex where I lived in one half and rented the other half out and became a de facto landlord. And I got the bug and just kept buying property. But times change, and so opportunity changes. You know, if you study the niches that we've been talking about, a really strong niche in the past several years has been multifamily apartment buildings. And there's been so much money chasing those deals that it's compressed the cap rate. It's brought the returns down. It's made deals harder to find. And it's just one indication that if you get totally dogmatic, stuck on a particular niche, and I'm the condo king, then at some point when the market changes, you're left behind.
Yeah, I mean, it's about getting pigeonholed. Actors talk about getting typecast. You can only play one type of a role. And, you know, the thing is, it's important to stay in a space where you're expert. But it's also important to expand your expertise to go where opportunities take you. You know, just looking at you in the 17 years that I've worked with you, Robert, I've seen you wander around from thing to thing, and you become a student of that niche, and it's the thing. And then when the opportunity moves or you change who you are and where you want to be, because let's face it, it's not just running around going where the money is. It's a personal decision about how do you want to live and what kind of people do you want to do business with and what kind of problems do you want to solve? We're all going to have problems. There's problems in everything. thing. And so when you decide that you're going to move into a niche, the key is to first of all, make sure that it's a niche that's going to be worth the effort it's going to take for you to break into it. Number two is to surround yourself with people who are smart, well-qualified, who can help you learn it quickly with minimal mistakes and brain damage. And then number three, commit yourself to really learning it so that you can be successful at it. There should be enough meat on the bone in terms of how long that niche is going to be in the sunshine for you to be able to get a return on that investment. And of course, then remembering these things cycle, because things, they go down, they come up, they go down, they come up. And as you over your career add these different niches to your repertoire, your portfolio of experience and expertise, if you will, then you have a lot of ways to respond to an ever-changing environment. And there's one thing that we can be certain of in the future, and that's change.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember the first time we bought an office building, and it was a whole new set of language and forms and real estate professionals and lenders. It was all different. And it was a building we were going to occupy our business in, and we did. And within 8 months, we outgrew the space. Like, well, what now do we do? Well, let's go buy a bigger building. And we went way out and bought a huge building that had lots of other tenants in it. And it gave us the ability to expand, kept that first building, thankfully, you know, but it was a whole learning curve. And to your point, it takes time to get educated on this stuff. But why not get educated on different niches so that when markets change, when your ability changes, when your interests change, you've got that in your back pocket?
Well, there's another part of what we're going to be talking about today, and that's scale. Because let's face it, it takes almost the same amount of time to learn how to do single family homes well or smaller deals well as it takes to learn to do bigger deals. And so when you understand that you get economies of scale, you get a lot more leverage on your time, your money, your team, your energies when you go a little bit bigger. I mean, we've been teaching syndication for a long, long time. Why? Because if you're going to go, why not go big? You might as well go bigger. And the key is you want to go bigger faster. And so bigger deals allow you to do that. Syndication allows you to do that because it gives you access to capital. Big team, the right team helps you go bigger faster because you can learn a lot more, a lot faster. There's a lot of ways to do it. I think the biggest thing, you know, Simon Black says, add a zero to your thinking. I like to say add a comma to your thinking, right? I mean, if you're going to think, you might as well think big.
One of the things about commercial property is because it's generally bigger, it often gets done through the vehicle of syndication. And if you haven't listened to our show before, it's just a big fancy word that says we put together, we syndicate all the money to do a deal. One person doesn't come up with it. I remember having Michael Becker on the show some time ago and asking him about the deals that he was lending on. He's a commercial lender and he lends on multifamily. And I said, you know, Michael, how many of the apartment complexes that you fund are a single individual or partnership buying versus a syndication? He goes, 100% are syndication. So there's two roles to play in that. There's the passive investor that can invest alongside somebody doing it right, or there's the active person that says, I want to learn that niche. The man you're about to meet is both. We've known him for more than 15 years. He's got a huge resume of real estate experience, including a lot of commercial property. When we come back, you'll meet Tom Wilson today on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
Have you decided to invest in real estate but find you don't have the time to evaluate your options? Successful real estate investing takes expertise, market knowledge, and time. Many affluent investors with busy schedules choose to rely on real estate experts. They partner with proven teams with a successful track record. Four Peaks Capital Partners have created a system which allows accredited investors an opportunity to invest in undervalued assets. If you're an accredited investor looking for passive income, call 877-5-INCOME. That's 877-5-INCOME, or visit privateincomeinvestments.com.
Hi, this is Patrick Donahoe, CEO of Paradigm Life. Wall Street and banks spend billions of dollars per year in advertising with the goal to convince you that they are the solution. But take a look around. None of their advice has worked. If you're listening to this, odds are pretty good that you're already a real estate investor, or at least becoming one. So why do you do it? Is it to hedge inflation, the tax benefits, or maybe it's to get your money away from Wall Street? It's because of these benefits and so many more that I created the Real Estate Investor's Guide to the Perpetual Wealth Strategy. When you combine successful real estate investing with the Perpetual Wealth Strategy, you have the recipe for what has helped the wealthy to establish their financial well-being for decades. You can download the Real Estate Investor's Guide to the Perpetual Wealth Strategy today by clicking the Resources tab on the Real Estate Guys Radio homepage. Don't wait. Go download it now.
Hi, this is Chris Martinson, author of Prosper, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. It's great having you on the program, especially today because you picked a good show. It's a series we're doing on profitable niches, and the niche today is commercial property. Our next guest is returning to The Real Estate Guys program after several years, but we've known each other a long time. Please welcome back to The Real Estate Guys, Mr. Tom K. Wilson. How are you, Tom?
Thank you, Robert. Thanks for having me back.
Well, it's great having you on the program. You're no stranger to broadcast. How long have you been doing your show?
5.5 years now.
Five and a half years.
Boy, I learned a lot about how to do it by listening to the Real Estate Guys radio.
Well, there you
so
go.
I'm still learning, but my gosh, it's fun to be able to talk to all these experts and ask your questions, right? And learn so much by doing them.
Yeah, good stuff. I mean, it's a great way to, you know, force yourself to get in these conversations. And, you know, we've known each other forever. You've owned a lot of single family houses, a lot of multifamily property, and a lot of the different asset classes we're talking about that we really constitute commercial real estate. So from a guy that's done it all, if you will, what is the big attraction to the commercial side of the business?
Well, I progressed along from houses to multifam and now commercial, for one, because it's enabled me to scale more, add the comma, add the zeros.
Yep.
And also, you know, every asset class and every market has its cycles. And I think the best thing that I've done over the years is to adjust to different markets and asset classes as they progressed. Maybe if there's a negative about what I've done is maybe I haven't moved quite fast enough. It's awfully easy to get kind of really comfortable and something that has worked before, and it really takes a lot of work and listening to others and research and insight to say, okay, that worked, that's great, but maybe there's something better.
That's such a good point. You know, we talked about getting pigeonholed, and watching you be involved in both single family and multifamily at kind of the same time for many years. You know, it's like that's a way to kind of bridge the gap a little, but also you were involved in a real estate market that was far away from where you lived. And with a background as an engineer, I think maybe that's part of it too, is that you've approached the problem maybe differently than some.
Certainly, I approach the problem from a numbers perspective, from a research perspective, you know, from that perspective, Russ and I, you know, have a lot in common. We're the spreadsheet guys.
Yep.
And I'd say the other thing I've done is to, fortunately, you know, it's often techies try to do everything themselves. And I got some advice fairly early on that don't try to do everything yourself. You can accomplish a lot more in life if you gather experts around you, leverage what you can do by having others. Don't feel threatened because somebody knows more than you do. Take that as a positive. I like to constantly be learning from others, and that's how I learned that, you know, other places, other asset classes, other markets were stronger than they were in the past relative to where I'd been, and studied that, took that advice, and progressed forward.
You know, we talked before, we had you on a little bit about, you know, how hot multifamily's been, and you're certainly aware of that as you're in that space. But I also think there's a lot of people that don't understand the very nature of a commercial real estate deal. I mean, I understand a house, someone lives in the house and they pay me rent to live there. Okay, that makes sense. Well, I guess a business isn't that different. A business lives in a building. Talk about how the commercial part of the real estate investment business is different from the tenant perspective.
Well, the irony of it is, I think a lot of folks that progress from houses to multifam do so because their perception is they understand it. And for anybody who's in that, any of our friends and ones associated with you, like Michael Becker and Brad and David and so forth, they can all tell you, wow, there's a lot more moving parts to a multifam than a bunch of houses put together. So you got to understand that. Well, I think from a commercial standpoint, it looks foreign to them. And indeed it is, relative to what they've known before. So you got to take two approaches. You either need to learn about it, or you do need to learn some to at least ask good questions, or you find, get a team around you, or get a syndicator who's done all that heavy lifting and understands it. Commercial buildings have some of the advantages of having longer-term leases, much higher quality tenants. Generally, they're triple net, which means you don't have to pad your projections as to what the performance is going to be by the uncertainty of what are the tax, insurance, maintenance going to be in the future.
So, all right, this is a key concept. So no investor left behind. One of my favorite things about commercial property is this concept of triple net. And so basically what it means is we're used to a residential lease being in place on, say, an apartment or a house, where as the landlord, there's certain expenses that we incur, like the property taxes, like sometimes part of the utilities, like the upkeep of the home. And with a commercial, it's not like that because the tenant is much more involved day to day with the building. So talk about why triple net makes so much sense from the owner investor point of view.
You know, any of us that have had rental properties understands about turnover, tenants skipping overnight, having to do evictions. These elements are rare in the commercial arena. You have much higher quality tenants. The leases are 50 to 100 pages sometimes. It takes a higher skill level to understand that. But if you have that skill level, you've got a lower risk and actually easier to manage situation, in my opinion. For multi-tenant products, whether it's office or retail or industrial, any of these, you want someone who's managing it, who can handle the rollover. But the rollover is much slower and much more controllable than it is for residences who might skip out overnight or have short-term leases. So what happens is with these tenants, you get to bill the tenant for their portion of the taxes and the insurance and the maintenance cost. If you have a single tenant situation, and maybe we can chat about that a little bit later because it's quite different between a single tenant and multi-tenant. Single tenant situation, often we have what you're referred to as absolute triple nets, which means the landlord doesn't even get the bill.
Right.
And there are 15-year leases, typically sometimes longer, and the tenant gets those bills and pays them directly and usually is responsible for the whole structure as well. So that's your main risk on a single tenant is whether or not they'll go bankrupt.
So triple net sounds like in many ways it's the holy grail of real estate because your tenant is basically paying all the costs. Here's why it makes sense from the tenant's perspective. These are professional tenants. They're businesses, they're endeavors, they're enterprises, and they don't want to call the landlord if something has to be replaced in one of the office spaces. They want to be able to do that work. They don't want to have to call the landlord to see, hey, can we put our sign up? Can we paint our building? Many of those things, of course, are handled in the lease, but the work actually gets done by vendors hired by the tenant. It lets them run their business a lot better, as opposed to the typical tenant mentality of, say, a multifamily property, where it's like, well, I have a problem, I'm going to call my landlord. And you're thinking, oh man, now I got to hire a tradesperson. I've got to get him out there right away. Maybe it's the air conditioning is out and it's 100 degrees. All of those things in a retail or an office or an industrial property are handled by the person who is in the property. And landlords can be a lot more absentee, if you will.
Indeed. And in fact, sometimes when we purchase a product that's outside a region that we have one of our partners in, then we'll find another partner, or usually in our network now it's large enough that most any deal that we're doing, we've got somebody in that metro that we already calibrated on, and they'll handle the local management. And again, management for usually a triple net kind of product is much less than it is in a residential kind of product.
Well, and different kind of experience too. We think
very
about
professional level.
Right, a single family manager can be a guy in a truck, right? Or it could be a firm that has several houses or even hundreds of houses. Same thing with multifamily. If you have an on-site manager, sometimes you also hire professional management to manage the manager. But in these types of properties, again, because so much is borne on the tenant's shoulder, the management style is different and the costs are a lot less.
Indeed. So the key is when you're vetting a product like this, you really need to understand who the tenant is. And to a large degree, the less tenants there are in a product, especially if it's a single tenant, you're mainly investing in that tenant.
Well, let's talk about that because this is one of the key distinctions. And you mentioned single tenant versus multi-tenant. Now, I've owned both, right? You think, well, what's a single tenant? Think of a Walgreens that's a standalone building or a fast food restaurant or a gas station or a big manufacturer. It could be that the only thing on the property is this one building occupied by this one tenant, as opposed to maybe a retail strip mall where you have several tenants or an office building with multi-stories. Talk about the pros and cons of single tenant versus multi-tenant.
Well, in multi-tenant, you have the distribution of risk in that you're unlikely to go from 100% to 0% occupancy if as you have some turnover. However, in tough times, you can get, you know, a decrease in occupancy, and at some point, you could reach a number that is below your break even. So it's very important to manage that, just like you do in multifam, except that you generally have a much longer anticipation as to when that tenant is going to leave,
yep.
And you can start working on filling that. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't have some longer periods of vacancy, and you've got the tenant improvement issue, which is like a make ready in a multifam or
yep.
a rehab. The multi-tenant is one type of commercial or industrial product in which you're managing a portfolio of tenants, if you will, on a rent roll that turns over. In a single tenant situation, you generally have a much longer lease even than you do for multi-tenant. 15 years is not uncommon. Out of the last five we've done, that's pretty typical.
Yep.
And so now people say, oh, but I'm really worried about if I lose that one tenant, I'm in big trouble.
Sure.
You are.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's much more important on a single tenant to really do a deep dive on the tenant's financials and what the market that they're in. And we look at all those. We did one filtration group not long ago that was a company had been around for 75 years. They were in 70 locations in 20 countries, and they were a primary supplier of air and water filtration parts. Pretty essential. I don't think people are going to want less clean air and water.
Right.
So I thought that's pretty strong. Their financials are very strong. And if you do a Walgreens or one of these big national brands that's public company, the returns on those are so low. The risk are pretty low. Shoot, I heard of a McDonald's in San Francisco last month that sold for a cap rate of 1.7.
Wow.
Okay, so
pretty sure they're not going
so
anywhere.
There may be low risk, but we aren't fond of those. But if you get the next tier of folks that maybe are not nationally known, they're not household names, but they're essential supply chain, say, in manufacturing. And they've been around a long time. The financials look good. We have on retainer a Fortune 100 CFO that does deep dives for us. So you're looking into private companies, which is harder to get the data. You need somebody who really understands how to do that. Need to look into the principal's finances to see if there's maybe a problem there that could cross over into the business. Those kinds of things. If you've done a deep dive on that and you've really researched them, you've looked at the market, is the market that they're in something that's strong? Is there not likely to be a better mousetrap that's going to put them out of business tomorrow, even though they've been in business for 75 years? Go all through that, and it passes that mustard. Is it possible they might go bankrupt? Yes.
Sure.
Pretty unlikely.
Right.
I think that bet's a lot better, we feel, if you've done that kind of homework, than it is, some other kinds of asset classes.
So good point. Not just the actual tenant, but the industry they're in. You might find a really seasoned 8-track tape manufacturer, and that might be the wrong thing, right, to go into. But I also bring up another great point, Tom, and that is the tenant is expecting to be vetted, right? I mean, they're a business. They're used to providing financials. Even if it's a private business, the landlord has a right to know, and they're making a case if they want to be your tenant. I remember we looked at a building that had 2 years into a 30-year lease. So there were 28 years left in the lease, and there was another 30-year option. And we ended up not pulling the trigger on this because of the returns, and it'll all come clear in a minute. This isn't exactly a credit tenant, but we said, well, now what's the durability? I mean, that's a great lease unless it goes out of business. The tenant was the Internal Revenue Service, not likely to go out of business.
Darn.
But, right, unfortunately. But, of course, stable lease, very, very strong, right, tenant. Durability of rent is good, but the amount of the rent wasn't very high. Now, that was a single tenant building, and it was a complete absolute triple net. They took care of everything. It was attractive for a few minutes, but it's always compared to what? So I think that, you know, there's just this concept in commercial of what they call a credit tenant. And that terminology is kind of what you spoke to, the household name, a CVS, a Walgreens, a McDonald's. Those are credit tenants, meaning that by their very nature of the business, they're either publicly traded or they're huge, huge private companies that they kind of have a credit. I'm not concerned if I lease to Starbucks whether or not they're going to make their payment. But they know that, and so the rates they'll pay won't be competitive.
Indeed.
You know, like think about multi-tenant buildings where you have what we call an anchor tenant. And the anchor tenant is one of those credit tenants. And the idea is if there's an anchor tenant in there, then it's easier to lease the other space. Well, they know that, so they negotiate a much different rate than, say, the little corner coffee shop is gonna.
Yeah, one of our power centers has the strip tenants that are in the shadow of the anchor, where we're getting four times the rent that we are the anchor. So we let the anchor have that lower rent because they draw in the other folks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as long as that anchor tenant has, a service component or somehow has figured how to navigate with and have synergy with e-commerce as opposed to, fighting it or losing from it, then, we're okay with retail as long as it's got strong service components.
Well, and that's another thing to think about when we think about multi-tenant buildings of any kind is that you want to have that synergy, the complementary use. You've got things to worry about like parking and how many parking spaces per unit and what is the use. Different for a manufacturing concern than it is for a retail. So we're talking today about commercial real estate, lots of different ways to invest in commercial. We'll continue our conversation with Tom Wilson when we come back. We'll also play real estate trivia next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to the Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
If you want to retire in the next 5 years or less through real estate, then please pay close attention. My name is Brad Sumrock, and I've taught thousands of my students how to replace their incomes, quit their jobs, and retire faster than they ever thought possible by not investing in single-family homes. You see, there's a secret to retiring fast with little risk, and it has nothing to do with being a landlord, fixing toilets, or flipping houses. The secret is multifamily apartment buildings. Starting from scratch with zero experience, I managed to pocket over $1 million in cash and retire from my 17-year corporate job within 3 years of apartment investing. Now, this is not your typical no-money-down real estate training. We believe in smart, hard work for intelligent people. So if you're good with your finances, have a decent job, or saving your money, and you're looking for a change and getting out of the rat race, then investing in apartment buildings might just be the answer you've been looking for. Send an email right now to Sumrock at realestateguysradio.com to get the details of my upcoming training event. And you'll also receive my free training webinar, Apartment Investing for Beginners. That's Sumrock, S-U-M-R-O-K, at realestateguysradio.com.
Memphis is famous for being the home of the king of rock and roll, but it's also the king of cash flow. If you're looking for affordable cash flow properties, it's hard to beat Memphis. Get your portfolio rocking and more cash flowing your way by calling Terry Kerr at Mid-South Home Buyers. Terry's the king of turnkey properties. Contact Terry through the resource section at realestateguysradio.com. And be sure to order Terry's Tips for Turnkey Rental Property Investing Report. It's free. Just send your request to turnkey at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Harrington, an original shark from the hit TV show Shark Tank, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. We talk real estate every week, and the last few weeks we've been talking specifically about real estate niches. Today, the profitable niche we're discussing is commercial property, buildings occupied by businesses, not people that live there. Lots of opportunity there. We'll get to some of that with Tom Wilson. But first, we're going to play real estate trivia, your chance to win a prize. But only today's real estate trivia question. In just a minute, I'm going to give you a question that has something to do with a class of commercial property. And as soon as you think you know the answer, send us an email to trivia at realestateguysradio.com. That's trivia at realestateguysradio.com. Include your name, the answer to the question, and your mailing address, because if you're the winner, we're going to give you an awesome prize. It's the ABCs of real estate investing with Ken McElroy, the Rich Dad Advisor for Real Estate. Kenny's got this great book. Many of our listeners have read it, but if you win it and you've read it, give it to a friend. Everyone can learn something from the ABCs of real estate investing. Last week on the show, we were talking about resort property as a niche, and we asked this: how many hotels are officially inside of the Walt Disney World Resort? We were doing the show from Orlando and talking about the tremendous demand there for overnight accommodations. Walt Disney, of course, is the primary driver. How many hotels are actually inside of the park? The answer is 36. 36 hotels within Walt Disney World. 27 are actually Disney-themed hotels, and there are 9 non-Disney properties, several golf courses, a camping resort, and lots of other entertainment venues. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. We're talking about commercial property. Here's what I want to know. Where is the largest industrial park in the United States? We'll talk before we're done with Tom about industrial property. Where's the largest industrial park in the U.S.? If you think you know, send your best guess to trivia at realestateguysradio.com. Include your name, the answer to the question, and your mailing address so that if you're the winner, we can send you the ABCs of Real Estate Investing by Ken McElroy. That's today's real estate trivia question. It's profitable niches. This week we're talking about commercial property, and we've got Tom K. Wilson with us. We've known Tom a lot of years, and Tom has experience in all kinds of commercial property, in retail and industrial, and we'll talk about some of those as we go along. But, you know, I think one of the things that we want to talk, Tom, about today is folks have this idea that commercial isn't that healthy because everyone's buying from Amazon today, so nobody's going to the store, or because, well, we're not manufacturing in the USA. Can you speak to some of those thoughts?
Let's start with the manufacturing one. It turns out we're still manufacturing a lot in the US and will continue. It's just there's going to be less labor in it. So as far as creating jobs, that might be a problem. But they're getting more robotic. It's sometimes less expensive to manufacture something close to where it's going to get distributed, and closer where it's designed and that sort of thing. And in the arena of e-commerce, actually, we're now having a little bit shift in the need, because e-commerce needs to, you still need to get the product to the door.
Right.
So now we need more distribution centers, we need smarter distribution centers, we need the last mile distribution centers, and all of that is actually putting an increase on the demand for a lot of industrial buildings. So you'd say, well, that just says warehousing, so it's not going to have an effect on all the rest of the commercial buildings. Well, yes, it does, because it removes a lot of the supply. A lot of these buildings are flexible and can be used for various purposes. So it's so actually the demand is up. In fact, if you go look at just Google for highest demand asset classes by REITs and large institutional investors now, you'll find that commercial and especially industrial are at the top these days. And that's because it is a growing need, and the e-commerce component is actually contributing to it and driving it up.
You bet it is. And even on the retail side, remember, there are certain businesses you have to physically go to, your nail salons, your dry cleaning. I mean, there's definitely places you have to go, but it is a shifting sands for sure. And I think let's talk about industrial, because this is an area that you've gotten more and more involved in the past few years. And there's a change. And, you know, you've talked about the change in terms of who's occupying the building, and maybe it's robots instead of people. But with our president, new president, wanting to bring more jobs to the U.S., what do you think the outlook looks like for industrial properties?
Well, I think in the industrial demand is up. There's a reason, of course, all of these REITs and institutional and, folks have large market research folks. You know, the old kind of paradigm that, well, I'll just go buy something next to the next McDonald's because they have such a big market research.
Right.
Well, there's a reason all these institutions are investing in this area. And that is not just demand by the need for e-commerce distribution, but manufacturing is becoming more and more efficient and cost-effective because it's becoming more automated and more robotic. So one of the reasons why a lot of manufacturing went offshore in the past was because of the labor rates. Well, when you come down to a very small amount of labor, it's amazing. Some of the major manufacturers now, you go into these buildings, and they're putting out these millions of products a day, and there's only 63 people in there.
Right.
That's pretty amazing. So, yeah, retail has gotten a bum rap. Seen a lot of headlines over the last 2 or 3 years here in Wall Street Journal and everything else that likes to make news. And they talk about how retail is in such trouble. And you ask from that, you would conclude maybe that all of brick and mortar is going to be scraped across off the face of the earth. And you ask people, do you really think that's going to happen? And nobody says, well, I guess it doesn't make sense. That's not going to happen.
Right.
So we'll take malls, for example, kind of the extreme end. There's approximately 1,000 malls in the United States. And the projection is by many that about 300 of those will go dark.
Yep.
But there's another 300 that will probably do just fine. They'll be adding entertainment, service components, all that sort of thing. And so it's the ones in the middle. They got to figure out how creative they're going to be. Then you go down the smaller level and you look at, say, power centers. So our our company owns a power center in Amarillo. We paid $20.2 million for it.
Now, how would you define a power center?
Power center means big box or anchors or big box tenants in there. So it's a lot larger than your neighborhood strip mall.
Yep.
And it's not just, say, a single anchor like a Walmart with a strip past that. So a power center, one would say, oh, gosh, a big box. That's got to be right up there with the mall. It depends. Yes, I think it certainly deserves a lot of scrutiny, but we took a deep dive look at each one of those four anchors in this power center, and every one of them had a strong service component. Every one of them was adding brick-and-mortar stores in the next couple of years. You know, if they figure out how to, if they have a service component such as clothing. Most people still like to try on clothing. Yes, they might buy something online, then they'll go to the store to go pick it up, and they'll buy something else while they're there.
Right.
Michael's is one of those anchors in this power center. Artsy, crafty kinds of things. Yes, people may buy their enamels online some, but artists like to go and touch and feel and compare and all that sort of thing. So yep. we felt, and they're expanding in their brick and mortar store. So it's very dangerous to draw a broad brush conclusion from looking at a few headlines.
Yeah.
So we especially like neighborhood service centers because, in fact, to keep the four-letter word retail out of it, we've sort of changed our how we market them now and talk about them. We talk about the service centers because that's really what they are.
Yeah.
So as long as people, you know, so far I don't think people can get their hair done online. I don't think they can get their dog, you know, checked at the online. They got to go to the vet. And you can't have a beer online. So, and people like to still socialize.
Believe me, I've been trying. Can't figure it out yet.
So I think as long as, you know, when you got largely service components there, I think they're pretty e-commerce immune. So yeah. we like them.
Good point. Now let's talk about the other side, which is the true industrial. So there's different levels of that. I mean,
certainly
there's the
are.
Heavy manufacturing, there's light industrial, there are industrial parks where they share some proximity based on other tenants. What do you like in the industrial space?
Well, indeed, you can't broad brush it. There are lots of different ones. There are ones that specialize in distribution, those that have refrigeration in them. There are light manufacturing, there's R&D, there's heavy manufacturing. We have some products that it's, you talk about whether or not a tenant's going to leave. We have some where the tenant had to build and install their heavy equipment before the building was constructed around it.
Not likely to leave in the middle of the night.
I don't think they're going to skip on you. They have a high incentive to stay there once they have that kind of investment. So that's heavy industrial. There are buildings that have huge cranes in the top going across the beams with no post or interruptions on the inside. So that's a very specialized one. As you get down farther, there starts to be a cross sometimes between office and industrial. And a lot of those are referred to as flex buildings. They tend to have high ceilings. They generally are structured so that there's no or minimum number of support or load-bearing walls on the interior. So that as you have tenants in there, it's very easy to adjust the amount of space that's for office and the amount of space that's for warehousing or a shop in the back to make things or distribute things.
Which can vary drastically between two neighboring occupants.
So, of course, one of the issues you get in commercial is tenant improvement. So, you know, in residential, you'll have to do a make ready. Sometimes if it's really bad or new, you've got to do a heavy rehab. Well, that's sort of the comparison analogy to that in commercial is the TI or tenant improvement.
Yeah.
So indeed, anybody doing a commercial deal needs to make sure they have plenty of reserves in place to cover the high leasing fees, also to cover the tenant improvements, and you need to figure out what that might be.
That's a really good point, because when we have those same fees in residential, they tend to be less. And yet the way that commercial brokers tend to get paid when they bring a tenant is over the life of the lease. And that can be a really big check to write up front. So if you're buying an empty building and you're going to have to pay a broker to bring you a tenant, that's going to look different than if you're buying something where there's still 15 or 20 years left in a lease.
Absolutely. So you got to make sure you have enough reserves. We generally... anything that we buy, we calculate how much reserves we think we're going to need, and then we assume that we're going to live through a recession. And you have to make an assumption on how deep that recession is going to be. So that's why we listen so carefully to all the folks that you surround yourself with and to help us make those predictions. If you worst-cased everything, you probably never buy anything. So
right.
So you have to, you know, you have to come up with a good, intelligent judgment on what that's going to be. So on tenant improvement, if you have a flex building, an industrial, say, sometimes your cost is less to make a tenant improvement for the next tenant, because if their amount of space needed for office or showroom is different relative to the shop compared to the next tenant, it's a lot less costly to go move that partition or interior part. And in industrial also, your tenant improvements tend to be a lot less because they aren't looking for high-end finish on the inside.
Right.
So each asset class that you pick, you've got to take into account what's the likely TI for each of those. And TI, by the way, is you still get pretty good depreciation on that. You get pretty long. It's 39 years for a commercial building that's non-residential, but your TI you get to write off in 15. And then there's some aspects of the new tax law that allows you to write some of that off right away.
So good stuff. Hey, before we get out of here, we could talk about this for hours and hours, but one of the things that you've done is you've allowed the everyday investor who is intimidated by the idea of investing in a retail center or in an industrial park, the ability to come alongside what you guys do. I know you've been to several of our Secrets of Successful Syndication events, and you've done a ton of syndications. So talk about how you work with investors and what the role is, because it's so important to have someone who knows all of this. If I go, wow, I get it. I totally see where industrial could make a ton of sense, and I love triple net, but you know, I'm just a little guy. How do I get involved? You guys have kind of made that easy for folks.
That's certainly our intent, and we certainly have clients that have respected what we've learned and on all the heavy lifting that we do. Part of what we do also is to educate our clients, to help them ask tough questions. Don't want anybody getting on board or investing something they don't have at least enough understanding to ask good questions. I think that's good advice for anybody. It doesn't mean you have to be an expert,
yep,
but you should learn enough, such as the Real Estate Guys radio show's podcast, and to be able to ask very intelligent questions of the person and team members that you're considering surrounding yourself with. So as a syndicator, we've got a lot of experience in the products that we're in. We have team members who supplement that as we enter any new asset class or any new market. So we have a cardinal rule that if we're into a new marketplace or into an asset class which is more unique than something else that we did, and as we've discussed during this program, there's a huge variety of types of products within each asset class.
Right.
And we make sure we always have on the team somebody who's an expert in that particular area.
Well, this is one of the things I really appreciate about you, Tom, because although you've got a ton of experience and wisdom and have done real estate investing for years and years and years, you're also humble enough to bring another partner on if they have expertise in an area that you may know a lot about but isn't your core strength. And I think as I look at your different offerings, you've got different players who are involved because they're different deals.
Indeed. I think it's always better to take a smaller piece of the pie and make sure you have enough experts on that team to minimize the risk, not only for yourselves, but especially for your investors. We take managing other people's money extremely seriously. Sometimes a deal that we turn down, I might consider myself, but if I'm managing other people's money, I'm not going to do that. And how do I determine what the risk is? There's no absolutes, but if you get folks that are very experienced in each aspect of what you're investing in, you greatly increase the return risk ratio.
Excellent point. Hey, I know it's a lot to think about, and if you're new to commercial, Tom's put together a great report that talks in detail about many of the things we talked about and some of the things we didn't about commercial property. If you'd like to get a copy of that report, all you have to do is send an email to commercial@realestateguysradio.com, and like magic, it will come to you, commercial@realestateguysradio.com. Tom, this has been a great, great show. Lots of good advice. Thanks for sharing your time and your wisdom with us today.
My pleasure. I guess it doesn't come across at all how passionate I am about what I'm doing, but it's always fun to talk about. I always love teaching others, sharing others, and glad to answer questions of anybody that's been on listening on your program.
There you go. There's Tom K. Wilson. More when we come back, talking about commercial property on today's Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
This portion of the Real Estate Guys radio program is brought to you by International Coffee Farms, where you can own a parcel of land in your very own specialty coffee farm in Panama for as little as $15,000. Here's how it works. Deeded half-acre parcels entitled Specialty Coffee Farms in Boquete, Panama are turnkey managed professionally on your behalf by a team of local experts. Sustainable average income is estimated at 12%, and cash flow can begin within 12 to 15 months from the date of your parcel ownership. International Coffee Farms' mission is to own and operate specialty coffee farms that are economically, environmentally, and socially sustainable. As part of this mission, 20% of the gross profits of each farm is committed to a socially sustainable fund to improve the lives of the Panamanian coffee farm workers and their families. International Coffee Farms currently owns and operates 9 specialty coffee farms with half-acre parcels available for immediate ownership. To find out how you can become a coffee farm owner in Boquete, Panama, email coffee at realestateguysradio.com. That's coffee at realestateguysradio.com.
Stop for a moment. Why are you listening to this show? Are you dreaming of a bigger, brighter financial future? More personal freedom to live life on your own terms? What if there was just one skill that could make it happen? There is. Sales. Robert Kiyosaki says every entrepreneur must be good at sales. It's true for investors too. Sales is how you attract money, people, and opportunities. Sales is the skill used to negotiate deals and lead your team. Sales skills are essential to success. The good news is, it's a learnable skill. The great news is, we've created a 2-day interactive workshop to teach those skills to you. Make plans today to attend How to Win Funds and Influence People, Mastering the Art of Financial Selling. For dates and details, send an email to sales@realestateguysradio.com or visit realestateguysradio.com and look under events. Gain the skills you need to succeed. Email sales@realestateguysradio.com or look under the events tab at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Steve Forbes. You're listening to The Real Estate Guys. Have fun. You'll learn something.
And welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. If you've ever wanted to be comfortable asking people to invest money with you, then you want to come out to How to Win Funds and Influence People, our 2-day sales training. And now you're thinking sales isn't what I need to do, but really sales is about persuasion, sales is about influence, and nobody teaches that better than Russell Gray. It's coming up at the end of June. You can get all the details at our website at realestateguysradio.com. Speaking of Russell Gray, he's back with us. Always good to hear from Tom Wilson.
It is. It's fun listening. I get to sit here and listen to you do these interviews over the years, and I'm not pressured having to think about what the next question is, right? So I get a chance to really sit there and take notes and listen to what's being said. And the thing I appreciate about Tom is the pragmatism. You know, I think that a lot of times a lot of people in the real estate space get excited about the upside potential, about the hype. And I read Sam Zell's book, who is a iconic, you know, real estate investor. You think about a guy like Donald Trump before he was president. He was kind of the poster child for big time real estate investing. But he's a flashy guy. He's a sales guy. And Sam Zell, also an optimist,
yeah,
also a kind of, you know, a charismatic guy, if you will. But he's a guy who way bigger than Trump.
Yeah.
And what he said in his book, Am I Being Too Subtle? He goes, you know, the thing that really made me unique is I had the ability to look at all of the risk and consider the risk and not let it stop me from doing the deal. And when I listen to Tom speaking, it kind of reminds me of the way I've never met Sam, and someday it's on my bucket list through the show that we get a chance to sit down with Sam Zell. But it kind of made me think after reading his book, you know, kind of imagine that he's like Tom Wilson, you know, that he looks at what the deal is, not pretending it isn't something that it, you know, isn't, but really looking at what it is, looking about how to approach the problem, and with kind of that engineering mindset, okay, we're going to break it down into components. We're going to get the right people on the team. We're going to let people who are good do their part of it. It's almost like a project management thing in tech, where you're taking on these big complex projects and you're getting them done through a team who each take a manageable piece of it. And it's all aimed at hitting a financial result. And it's really fascinating. I really admire people have the ability to take complex problems and break them down like that.
You know, there aren't that many folks that balance passion and pragmatism, that's for sure. You know, yeah. This year on the Investor Summit, we asked Tom to be on our due diligence panel. We did a panel talking about how do you vet deals and so forth. And, you know, we look out there and there's not too many people more diligent than Tom, because he always approaches the deals that way to try to uncover. In this case, we talked about, you know, these tenants. It's not only the tenant, it's the industry they're in. What's the likelihood of them continuing to have the need for the real estate? I mean, those are smart things to be thinking about. And I think a lot of folks, you know, see a commercial property and go, man, I can't understand that. But he's been able to break it down in a pretty reasonable way. And of course, through syndication, is able to get lots of other folks to be involved. And I think that's one of the other keys, is that just because you are attracted to a particular niche in real estate doesn't mean that it's easy for you to get started in that niche by yourself.
Yeah, well, I remember when you first made the transition from residential and you got into development and you did it as a passive investor. You came alongside somebody that already had a great track record, had successful projects. You raised a little bit of money, and or actually you put a little bit of your own money in first, and that was your vetting of the person. You went through the deal, you were paying attention, and then it went well. And you said, okay, now let's do another one, and I'll bring a few close people in, and we'll do it again. And you went through that process, and you learned a little bit more. And then one day the guy says, hey, you seem to be a real student here. You're really kind of picking this up. Seems like you kind of got a knack for it and an interest. Why don't you be the developer? Why don't you be the syndicator? And you're like, wow, really, me? And, you know, that's how it kind of starts. Of course, you fast forward, and as we get deeper and deeper into development, pretty soon we realize we need to get somebody else on the bus, somebody right. Who is really, really focused and great at that. And of course, we did that, and the development business grew big because it had the right person. So when you look at people who kind of have that unique set of skills to be able to understand the deal, to be able to see the risk, to see the opportunity, run the team, and then keep rational when the stakes are high, that's a really unique skill set. And I think Tom has that gift, and it's really fun to watch him over the years work and put these deals together.
Well, we've also had the pleasure of seeing Tom present. He presents quite often and charts what's happening in a market and goes over the demographics and the numbers and all that kind of stuff. But he's also written this great piece. And, you know, we have a lot of reports in our report library, but Tom is a great student and a great teacher. So if you're interested in commercial property, you got a little taste of it today, send off for the report. All you have to do is send an email to commercial@realestateguysradio.com, and you can learn more about investing in this asset class. Hey, next week, it's another asset class. Got a few more weeks of our profitable niches. And I think maybe before we get through profitable niches, we might take a break and do Ask the Guys, because the questions have been piling up. So if you have a question for the guys, send it to us by going to the website at realestateguysradio.com and clicking Ask the Guys. Fire away your question, and we'll take a bunch of those and answer them. And then we're overdue. We haven't had an Ask the Guys show in quite a while, so we'll probably do one when we're wrapped up with this series as well. But big thanks to Tom Wilson for sharing a little bit of his knowledge. He's got lots more, but a little bit on commercial property. And until next week, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life. Powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723, extension 4. That's 888-489-7723, extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.